Hello and welcome to the Hoop Collective Podcast. We talk about the NBA, which we're doing on Sunday evening. Joining me from his new home in San Antonio, Texas, Andrew Lopez.
Still just me and my little bobblehead back here. I'm just enjoying these Texas sunsets.
Second consecutive podcast, we've had somebody shilling with the ESPN gear on. It was McMahon the other night, and now you wearing ESPN gear. I don't know if you think the bosses look at this and
I am nothing if nothing but a company man. I will that's why the bobblehead's here.
I'll leave it at that before we get in trouble. Joining us from Los Angeles, California, you know that Room Raider, that Twitter X, formerly known as Twitter, account that like rates people's backdrops. Like Ohm is 10 out of 10 on the Hoop Collective. If you're watching this on YouTube with his shoe closet or whatever you're in there, Ohm Yongmasook.
Good day, Wendy. Good Sunday, Spartans Land. Jason Richardson's son, 4-star recruit. Should have known this was going to happen though, because when I was up there during Spartan Week, I did see Tom Izzo get a FaceTime call from Jason Richardson's son. So should have known then that he was probably on his way to Michigan State. I think he was actually on his way to a recruiting visit that day. So
I do believe he goes by Jace. Is that correct? Yes. Jace Richardson.
Yes, Jace. Yep.
Okay. So congrats to the Spartans. They need some good news, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes. Yes.
All right. So in LA tonight, the Bucks played the Lakers in a preseason game. It was in and of itself not that important, but it was the first time Dame Lillard and Giannis Antetokounmpo played together on the same court. One of the big sort of events of the preseason, the fact that it was on national television on ESPN was obviously a plus. LeBron did not play. Anthony Davis did and looked pretty good.
Yes.
By the way, that's not breaking news that Anthony Davis looked good. But certainly if you're a Laker fan, you had to like what you saw with that. Also Austin Reeves, who's been taking it a little easy after Team USA over the summer, also didn't play, but AD played 16 minutes or 19 minutes and had 16, 7 and 5. He looked very good. Also had 2 steals and 2 blocks. Only took 2 3-pointers in 20 minutes. I don't know if that extrapolates out to the 6 that Darvin Ham wants, but that continues to be one of the strangest preseason proclamations that I've seen. But anyway, that's not what we want to talk about. By the way, the Bucks won by 11. It's what we saw from Dame Lillard and Giannis. And let me just say that what my takeaway from this game was that Dame Lillard and Giannis were Dame Lillard and Giannis. They were absolutely the players that you know them to be. And there was no issue whatsoever. And what I would say is that I don't think they did anything special, and they didn't really show that they were quote unquote working on anything together. They just kind of went out there and stretched their legs and were sort of a killer offensive force. Dame had a bad shooting night by his standards. He was 3 of 10. He played 22 minutes. He got to the foul line. He drew he had 1 and 1, and he had 1 foul on a 3-point play. But he had 14 points. He did Dame stuff. He didn't do much. Giannis played 15 minutes and destroyed. He had 16 points, 8 rebounds, an assist, 2 blocks, and 4 turnovers. It was a very Giannis performance. What I would say, my takeaway from this game, guys, and I'll throw it to you in a second. I don't think they've really done, at least they were not ready to take the wraps off anything that they're doing together. So for example, Giannis got 8 rebounds. I'm not sure how many of them were defensive. My guess is 6 or 7 of them were defensive. Most of them were defensive. And as is typical with Giannis, when he gets the defensive rebound, he initiates the offense. He goes down the floor. And when that happened, Dame spaced the floor. They didn't really have any action set up to take advantage of Giannis with Dame. Now, obviously, Dame has played with other guards who initiate offense in his career. He played the bulk of his career with CJ McCollum. It's not like he hasn't played where he's been off the ball initiating the offense before, but he's never played with a guard who would draw a double team. And Giannis comes down, and if he does any penetration whatsoever, he draws double teams. It's natural. So they didn't really have anything in their scheme or offense that would sort of take advantage of that, that they showed in their first game together. So right off the bat, I could just see where that is a great opportunity, because it's just, it's basic strategy, basic analysis. I wonder if how many possessions in Dame's career has there been a guy who's been double teamed, who's on the court besides him? obviously, I'm sure teams have double teamed guys in the post before. Maybe if CJ McCollum was super hot and a team was trapping, something like that would happen. But as a part of natural business, I don't know if I've ever seen it. So there was a couple times where Giannis got doubled and he kicked to Dame and Dame would swing the ball. They were able to generate a lot of open looks. And my takeaway, Ohm, was the Bucks, which is not breaking news. The Bucks are going to just ooze points. Like they're just gonna ooze points. They're gonna have average nights where they're great on offense. And when they have great nights, like I sort of feel like the same way about the Suns, who are just vomiting out points, like, you know, stretching. They score 15 points while they're stretching pregame. That's what I see from the Bucks right out of the gates in these two guys together.
Yeah, I think tonight you saw there was one play maybe where Dame threw the ball up court and transitioned to Giannis, and Giannis scores. And it just looks like you can see this happening so many nights. What I wonder is, like, I'm fascinated by how much pick and roll they're going to play together and what that's going to look like when Giannis is rebounding and then taking the ball up the floor and these teams try to create that wall like they usually do to stop Giannis from getting in the paint. And then he throws it out to Dame. I just feel like Dame is going to see so much more open space and air than he's so used to. And then we could actually see him probably driving a lot and creating because, you know, there are going to be guys trying to run him off the line. And so I think that's one underrated thing about Dame. We always think of him as this guy that spreads the floor, shoots deep threes, things like that. But now I think we could see him driving the lane a lot more too, because guys are going to be trying to run him off the floor. I think he's going to see a lot more open space than he's used to because he's not getting that defensive attention. And like I said, I can't wait to see him and Giannis do some pick and roll. I think tonight you could see on Giannis's face, it probably was not your normal preseason game, because I think he's excited. I think he's excited that he has Dame on his side. I think you can see them feeding off that. Now, look, Brook Lopez, like he normally does, I think he's hoisting a lot of threes. Probably he's going to hoist a lot of threes this season, because I think he's going to be wide open with those two guys on the floor. And Middleton, you know, John Horst said on the telecast tonight that Middleton participating in a full practice is going to get in and one preseason game at least before this preseason's over. And Middleton, I mean, think about this, how much he normally has to create his own shot. I mean, he's going to be probably seeing a lot of open space as well. So it's going to be exciting for them.
I think the one thing that I saw tonight, you talk about the pick and rolls. Obviously, we're going to see a lot of Dame the ball handler Giannis setting the screen. There was one instance I remember tonight. Giannis has the ball and Dame comes to set the screen. And I think Brooke is chilling. I think Brooke's in that left corner. So if you're helping off there, okay, you're giving up to a very good 3-point shooter. If you want to run some sets where it's nobody on that side, you can do that. But those, I think, are the ones that are more intriguing to me of how often we see some variation of Dame setting the screen. And I think kind of to Brian's point earlier, this is going to be a team that is going to score a lot of points this year. And I think, you know, when you can have either one of them just basically, I mean, if that's how they want to play it, running the point for 48 minutes, it sets yourself up pretty nicely.
Yeah, he Connaughton made 4 threes in this game. It was interesting, John Horst talking during the game, and you were right, Ohm, he did sort of have some news. I didn't know if St. Louis reported this, but, you know, Middleton was full practice, I think he said on Saturday, I guess.
Yeah.
And so that was good. He also was talking about, you know, how some of the players he sort of envisioned getting in sort of the shape that would be needed to play, you know, alongside those guys. And he specifically mentioned Malik Beasley, you know, working into like a different condition. Not that Malik Beasley was out of shape, but like if you move without the basketball with those two guys on the court, you're going to create shots. And I did listen to Dame's post game interview, and he was talking about how the game just felt very simple. And I would agree. It was a very simple looking performance. They just executed, didn't play great, but there was an ease into the way they played. So obviously we're going to watch them for 5-6 months. We're going to see a lot more of that. I don't think you could take anything away from that, but total belief in that pairing working than this game. I think both them and the Suns, those two teams that sort of built these terrific offseason offensive juggernauts. The Celtics team is constructed a little bit different, but both them and the Suns, you know, the Suns have had a couple of games where they played their guys where they just slayed offensively so far. And that definitely looked like the case in this one. So
like, I think usually when you see two superstars try to team up for the first time, usually you worry about like ego shots, things like that. Who's the man, you know, who's going to, you know, basically give up a certain type of alpha role. In this case with these two guys and their personalities and how well they get along with everyone, you don't have to worry about ego. If anything, you might have to worry about Giannis trying too hard to make this work or Dame trying too hard to make this work. But I feel like they could get off to a slower start just because they got to get to know all these new pieces and everything like that. But I feel like with Giannis, I think he's going to be so rejuvenated and so excited. I wouldn't be surprised at all if Milwaukee rolls right out of the gate and gets it going.
I agree. Go ahead, Andrew.
No, I was gonna say the one. I go back to what he said last week about, you know, is this the one time Giannis being? It's the one time he'd be happy if his usage was under 30%. And yeah. It's, you know, that may be fine. You may need it to still be a little bit of above that because depending on how things go. But at least everybody is saying all the right things. But I think like you said, Owen, because of the personalities of these two. It really feels like this is a situation that is going to work because of
like what they really kind of have to work out. I mean, yes, they do have to work out the, you know, their pick and roll timing and all that stuff, but end the game situation now,
yes.
Where it normally was like Chris Middleton, let's get in the ball. He's a finisher. Now you got Dame, one of the all time finishers in league history. I mean, that's going to be, I think the close games is where I want to see it play out. And if it plays out to perfection, where Dame is hitting the shots, or Middleton, man, that's they're going to be so good.
Well, part of the strategy, especially if Middleton is healthy, is to kill games so that you don't have end of game situations. Obviously, you're going to have them, especially in the postseason. But these guys could potentially just score so much that on an average night, they're just going to outscore you, even regardless of how their defense is performing. And look, the Lakers ran some plays at Lillard. I mean, this is all basic. They ran some plays at Lillard early on. I know at one point he ended up in a switch on Rui Hachimura, and Hachimura took him right into the post and had an easy basket. Like, okay, that's going to happen. But the upside, probably greater than the downside. The only reason I'm not totally gung-ho on the Bucks being the overwhelming favorite is because their strongest competition got Drew Holiday, obviously.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
Now let's talk about the play of the week, the pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavily on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom, Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good. The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liquor, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely. Vivid Seats wants you to get to the games you love this spring. Experience every pitch, assist, and game-winning shot live and in person. And the best part? Each transaction is a step toward a free 11th ticket with Vivid Seat Rewards. Score unbeatable perks like free tickets, surprise seat upgrades, and annual birthday deals. As official ticketing partner of ESPN, Vivid Seats is offering you $20 off your first $200 ticket purchase with code HOOP. That's code HOOP, H-O-O-P. Visit VividSeats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats, experience it live. Okay, so we'll keep an eye on that. I think we should talk about the champs a little bit here. Olm, you spent a media day in Denver and part of the Nuggets training camp with them in San Diego. I don't know if you got to see that. It's right now, we're recording this, it's halftime of the Nuggets game with the Bulls. And you may need to hurry up and write something about Jamal Murray's struggles. Jamal Murray is off to a horrible start. He really struggled in the first half tonight, played 15 minutes and scored 18 points. kind of worried about him. Maybe they may not be the favorite. Jokic, after absolutely dominating his first game the other night, he also had a very rough first half, a very low production first half against the Bulls. In 17 minutes, he had 10 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists. Obviously, both guys struggling. I don't even know if they're going to play the second half in this game. But, I just wanted to know what your takeaways were from from seeing and being around the Nuggets early on in this season.
I don't even know why Nikola came back from Serbia. He could just come back for opening night, stay there and continue summer of Jokic a little bit longer.
He probably would
a little more
prefer
dancing
that.
And singing in, a little more karaoke, a little more bare-chested karaoke. I know I think I saw a picture from Katie Wingy, the sideline reporter for the Nuggets. I think or maybe it was the Nuggets' main social media account, that he was watching horse racing while on the trainer's table. So Jokic, you know, look, if he was out of shape at all after the summer, Jokic, and I don't think anybody would have blamed him for celebrating the whole summer away after how he played in the playoffs. It's like he's putting up triple-double numbers already in these preseason games and is already on cruise control. I do think the Nuggets, the question for them is incorporating some of these new pieces. No more Bruce Brown, no more Jeff Green, you know. So now they got Reggie Jackson in there. Christian Brown steps up, takes a bigger role. You've got other vets like, you know, Holiday and these young rookies, younger guys like Julian Strother, man. He has been having a great preseason for him. Tonight, he had a block from behind where he pinned somebody. He's hitting a lot of threes. Not to say that this is going to happen in the regular season, because I think, like anything with Michael Malone, you got to earn his trust. And that especially goes for Peyton Watson, who they have, you know, big hopes for to kind of be an exciting piece off of the bench. But when it comes to the starters, that starting unit, they're still on cruise control. They still look great. Tonight, there was one play, Jamal Murray kind of did his little dribbling, found Jokic open. Jokic had like basically a little mini 12-foot runner that he could have scored on easily. Instead, he throws a lob to Aaron Gordon for a dunk. The chemistry there is just like, it's like they never took any time off, which, you know, the one thing I had heard about the Nuggets during the offseason was everybody was partying and celebrating it up and really enjoying their summer. So you kind of wondered how they would look when they came back. And I think Michael Malone ran them through a pretty hard camp. Unfortunately, and then when his father passed away, rest in peace to Brendan Malone, who was an amazing, amazing figure in the NBA for a long time. The father of the Jordan rules. Michael Malone still hasn't rejoined the team, obviously. But, you know, I think Malone, up to the point when he left the team, had pretty much, you know, he was conditioning them and keeping them in good shape.
So let me just say something about Brendan Malone. I actually meant to do this on Sunday and forgot. Well, I'm reaching that age where, unfortunately, I'm having to talk about people that I knew and respected who are passing away. And this is like the third time in like 6 months. Well, Brendan Malone was one of those people. Brendan Malone was one of the people that I learned from early in my career. He was an assistant coach with the Cavaliers and later interim head coach that I covered. And, you know, obviously, if you know about Michael, you know that he is a firebrand. He is extremely emotional, talks his talk, is not afraid to show his emotion, and, you know, sort of swings wildly. That was not his dad. His dad was absolutely completely low-key, never changed the tone of his voice almost, and had an incredible dry wit. I can think right off the bat of two jokes 20 years ago. One time, Dan Gilbert had just bought the Cavs and he was pumping money into the team. But at the time, like Dan Gilbert, like the day after he bought the team, which was in the middle of the season, he just started like giving him better everything. And unfortunately, the Cavs, started losing. Greatest start. And they were in the middle of this losing streak where they were losing, basically falling all the way out of the playoffs from like third or fourth place when Gilbert bought the team. And they had this game. I don't remember where it was, but it was part of a road trip and the Cavs were getting blown out on the road. And they showed the bench late in the game and there were players on the bench laughing. LeBron wasn't one of them, but there were players on the bench laughing. And I remember there was a practice the next day in Philadelphia. I don't remember where I had flown from that morning, but it was a practice in Philadelphia. And I had to ask Brendan Malone, who was the interim head coach, well, what did you think about the players laughing as you're getting blown out? Like, you know, when you're on this 5-game losing streak. And he goes, I don't know. Maybe that's when they found out we were having lobster on the plane. And that line was so amazing because at one point he was making fun of people getting into a twist about guys laughing on the bench, taking a shot at the idea that the Cavs were getting all this like luxury, you know, and also kind of like mocking my question. Like all in one fell swoop. And I just remember that line. Like, I had a hard time not laughing. Like, it was such a perfect line for that moment. And it was on the record. I used it yeah. in the paper. You know, maybe their players found out they were getting lobster on the plane that night. And then I remember after that season, they basically fired the whole coaching staff and the whole front office, except for Brendan. They kept Brendan. He was like the one man left over. And I remember being at the pre-draft camp. And when he fired everybody, Dan Gilbert had a press conference and he said, and he probably didn't fire Brendan Malone because Brendan Malone won 2 championships in Detroit with the Pistons, and Dan Gilbert, being from Detroit, worshiped the Pistons. And that was part of the defense. And so Dan Gilbert like announced basically, we're going to have a team like the Pistons. Like at the time, the Pistons were number one defense in the league. And, you know, we're going to be defensive first and all this stuff. You know, he made this announcement, like, that's the GM we're going to hire. That's the coach we're going to hire. We're going to be defense first. And so I remember being at the pre-draft camp, and Brendan was the only representative there from the Cavs. And they had nobody, everybody else was fired. And I remember standing next to him as he's watching the players play. And he goes, defense, the owners want defense. Never heard that before. That's a really good idea. His balance would, like, you know, he was Stan Van Gundy's assistant for a long time. He was Chuck Daly's assistant Jeff Van Gundy. His balance with that sort of low key, grounded, you know, never changed facial expression, obviously a championship coach, was head coach of the Toronto Raptors, was their first head coach. Yeah. So anyway, I had long phone conversations with him, just knew the game so well. So was able to give the game in such a plain but a valuable way. And I know that he was very proud of Michael because, you know, Michael kind of lost his way there a little bit in his 20s, and coaching kind of saved him, not saved him like he was, you know, going to be in jail, but like kind of saved, you know, his career path. Yeah. I think he initially wanted to be a firefighter home, wasn't it? I think he,
It doesn't surprise him, somebody from New York. I mean, he has that.
Or maybe the cop. I don't know. An Irish cop in New York. You'd never hear that, but
he'd be a great cop.
You're right. Yeah, he would be a brawler, let me tell you. Yeah. So anyway, this is diversion. Rest in peace, Brendan Malone. I'm so glad you got to see Michael. Yeah.
You know, Brendan Malone, I introduced myself to him when I was at Michigan State. I used to go to Detroit Piston games. This is when it was the Grant Hill, Allen Houston era. And I used to go as a student working freelance for the Lansing State Journal, and they weren't taking anything from me, but I still went and got a credential and went to as many games as I could. And I introduced myself to Brendan Malone. I grew up a Chicago Bulls fan, so I did not like anyone from that Detroit Piston era, let alone the architect of the Jordan rules. That book I read, Sam Smith book, multiple times. But he, you know what? He's like, he always had time. He didn't care if you were a 20-year-old student at Michigan State trying to break in the business, or later on when he was in New York as an assistant and I was, you know, the backup Knicks writer behind Frank Isola for the New York Daily News, I could talk basketball with him whenever, wherever. And it was just like he had time for you, and he had time to also teach you about the game. You know what
That's
I mean?
Right.
If you had questions That's about right. things. And this, it's amazing to think that the guy who devised the Jordan rules, the thing that just frustrated Michael Jordan for so long, you would think was this aggressive, hyperactive guy who would just, you know, an a-hole basically. And this guy was exactly how you described him. Calm, cool, demeanored, nice, approachable from anybody. And yet here's this guy that devised this unbelievable defense that frustrated Michael Jordan for a long time.
Yeah. So anyway, rest in peace, Brendan Malone, and condolences to the Malone family. Anyway, so I remember seeing somebody or maybe one or two people say that the Nuggets had a quote unquote disappointing offseason because they lost Bruce Brown, I guess. They didn't extend Jamal Murray. I mean,
don't ask Jamal about that, by the way. He says he doesn't understand anything about an extension and how that works.
I think he does understand it. He just doesn't want to talk about it. He probably doesn't understand why the media cares so much about it. Why, like, you don't perceive that they had a bad offseason, do you?
No, they didn't have a sexy offseason. That's what it is. When you look around the league and you see this arms race that's going on and everybody adding pieces here and there and they saw it. You know what I mean? Like the day before media day, they came in and the buzz was about, oh, Dame Lillard just ended up in Milwaukee and Drew Holiday is now in Boston. And, you know, how come the Nuggets didn't make this massive move? They didn't have to. I mean, the thing that, you know, I wonder is like you look around the league and all these teams are making these moves, but how many teams actually made a move to really adjust to beat the Nuggets and try to slow down Nikola Jokic? Brian, you see this, and Lopez, you've seen this too. Like, usually after a champion has an unbelievable postseason tear, or a superstar for that matter, so many times you see teams make their offseason moves catered to stopping that guy. We didn't see a ton of teams do that, load up on bigs or whatever have you. I know, I understand the game's not played that way. But the fact of the matter is, how are teams still going to stop Nikola Jokic? You still have to figure out a way to stop him. And I think the Nuggets knew we have the best starting five out of anybody, no matter who else makes all these other moves. And then, so it's just a matter of, can we find these other pieces to come off the bench? Michael Malone tends to play eight, nine guys, whatever it may be. So he's going to keep his rotation tight. He's going to play his starters a lot of minutes. So we just need a couple other guys to step up. They love what they saw with Christian Brown. They think an expanded role, he's going to be better. Reggie Jackson, we're going to have to see if he can kind of rejuvenate his career.
They did re-sign him
yeah,
to a number that was so bigger than that.
So initially coming out of camp, he's the backup point guard they're going to need. I think for me with the Nuggets, it's about the intangibles a little bit. Like, A, can they stay healthy? B, the leadership in the locker room. Like, they lost Jeff Green. That was a big leadership piece for them.
Right, Ish Jeff Smith Green was another
vocal veteran leader for Jeff them. Green. So Michael Malone's like, I need Jokic, I need Murray to take more ownership of this locker room. But I know you guys can lead by example. I want you guys to be more vocal. I want you guys to be better leaders. I think that's what you're going to see, a step up. And you know, he also challenged Jamal Murray in basically a kind of contract year with this extension. Go out there and do what you did in the postseason, but take that and do that for the entire regular season and become a first-time All-Star and become first-time All-NBA. And so I think that challenge and that nugget out there is out there for Jamal Murray. I think he's going to be motivated for that, to get those things and then obviously get his big extension.
By the way, in the first minute of the second half, Jamal Murray hit a three. So he's obviously gotten his footing underneath him.
Yeah, see, that's a good thing he didn't go play for Team Canada, because it's funny, him and Jokic had a funny moment at the podium on media day, where somebody said, "What happened? Why did you pull out of Team Canada?" And Jokic just goes, "2-a-day practices," and he was right on. Jamal just started laughing because Jamal didn't want both of them didn't want to have any more practices last summer after their long run.
Well, I submit that if Jokic had shown up literally the morning of the final, the World Cup final that Serbia was in, that Serbia would have won and that they would have just immediately put him in. Like, they wouldn't have cared that he hadn't been with them for the last 6 weeks. They would have been like right in. But yeah, the Serbian team, there might have been 3-a-day practices for the Serbian team. So Jokic was definitely, that might have been definitely a factor for him. So yeah, they definitely are relying on their younger guys. So you mentioned Peyton Watson, who was their first round pick last year, who's a wing with good size, that he's going to get big minutes or more expanded minutes. They obviously got a bad break with Flatko Kanchar, blew out his knee this summer. But also, I don't know how much he'll play, but Julian Strother, who was the 29th pick, their draft pick out of Gonzaga.
They follow the formula that they had. They found the success with Christian Brown, which is to draft guys that have been in college for a long time, who come in with a little more, they're a little older, but they come in with more experience. I mean, backup power forward is going to be the question mark for them a little bit. You know, they had Jeff Green there. Now it's going to be like Zeke Nnaji or, you know, whoever else they're going to try to find to plug in that backup role there. So obviously they have DeAndre Jordan's a backup five, but they don't use him a lot. But, you know, like, I was thinking about how many teams tried to really spend the summer to match up with the Nuggets to make moves to beat them. Somebody on the Nuggets mentioned to me, well, Sacramento, because Sacramento went out and got JaVale McGee a little bit. The Lakers, you know, I was watching tonight and I was like, you know, Jackson Hayes, we know how athletic he is. It's just a question of, can he ever put it together? Basketball IQ, stay on the floor.
That's been Andrew Lopez's life for the last
four
years.
Hit some outside shots. Tonight, Jackson Hayes made two spectacular moves. We know he's capable of doing that. You know, obviously they had Christian Wood. Christian Wood's not a defensive guy, and you know, Jokic is probably going to abuse him on the offensive end. But at least they made moves where they got a little bit bigger, because Anthony Davis, we know that Anthony Davis has to be. I said this to Dave McMenamin all last year. I mean, during that Western Conference Finals, AD has to be the best player on the floor for them to win that series. And I don't know if that's even capable now anymore with Nikola Jokic, but you have to be the second best player on the floor, hands down. And there were times that Anthony Davis wasn't that last year in the Western Conference Finals, but they are going to need more than that to slow down the Nuggets. And I like a lot of the moves the Lakers did and the continuity, and they got a little bit bigger. They can throw some bodies in Nikola Jokic. But when you look around the rest of the league, yeah, Phoenix added all this offensive firepower. They went and got Bol Bol. They got Nurk. But, like, are they really able to stop Denver? That's going to be a big question in my mind, is how many teams in the Western Conference can stop Nikola Jokic and Jamal Murray and slow down the Nuggets?
You know the Jackson Hayes hype machine there, Andrew?
Yes, yes, I do. Nashville Jacks will always have a place in Pelicans lore after they had some pre-camp there. I think it was yeah, it was last year or 2 years ago when they had pre-camp in Nashville because of one of the storms that hit New Orleans, and Jackson was hitting hitting threes everywhere. And he was going to be this great four because he finished the 21-22 season at the four and playing alongside Jonas Valanciunas, and it was great. But I think just to talk on Jackson real quick, what I saw from him tonight is what he has to do. He's going to have to finish around the rim, just be capable on offense, set some screens, which has been an issue sometimes of setting hard screens. And then just use his athleticism. He flew in for that block out of nowhere. He had the big dunk. I mean, those are the things that Jackson Hayes excels at. He's never going to be a guy, though, to Ohm's point, that is going to be able to defend a Jokic. But I don't think there's many people who can defend a Jokic. So it's one of those things where I know the Pel strategy in the past has been, let Jokic get 50 and then try to stop everybody else.
And well, that's what happened. Yeah. When Jokic, I don't remember what the number was. Was it over 40? When Jokic had that high number in the playoffs, the Nuggets lost. So that strategy is not without merit to let Jokic get his. And
like,
I agree. I don't
like two ways, right? Like I talked to somebody in the Nuggets when I was out in camp, that the two approaches always is, okay, we're going to let Jokic get his, and we're going to take all the other guys away from him so he doesn't get his assists and those guys don't get into rhythm. Or you get physical with him. You try to bother him. You try to get under his skin. You try to get him to get agitated with the refs, get agitated with everything else, start complaining about every little thing and affect his game that way. I've seen the Lakers do that where they got physical with him, and at times it has worked. But last postseason, I didn't see many teams get physical with him because I don't think they really had the personnel. Miami certainly didn't have the personnel to get physical with him. The Lakers didn't really get that. I mean, they took Anthony Davis off of him. They put Rui on him. You know what I mean? So, like, that's the one thing. Like, Phoenix, DeAndre Ayton, no. I mean, he wasn't physical by the end of that series. In the past, maybe Ayton maybe given Jokic a little issues, but Anthony Davis has to be the guy. And I wonder about this when I heard that, you know, Darvin Ham wants him to shoot six threes. And yes, he's capable of making threes. But I want to see Anthony Davis taking Nikola Jokic inside, getting him in foul trouble. That's the way that I think the Lakers can beat them, which is for Anthony Davis to absolutely make Nikola Jokic work on the other end and get him into foul trouble. We didn't see that a lot in that series.
I thought Jokic was as good as I've ever seen defensively in the finals. So, but, you know.
Don't tell Michael Malone that, because he thinks everybody from ESPN was out for a narrative to basically tear down his man, okay?
Yeah, I know. I know. And we at ESPN are guilty of disrespecting the Nuggets on numerous occasions, but I do think that there's something to be said for that. And I also think that part of what happened with that team last year was they literally had almost everybody in their rotation playing their best basketball. You know, Aaron Gordon was playing the best basketball of his career. You know, maybe not Caldwell Pope, but, you know, certainly was very, very successful. And even when, you know, I guess you could argue that it wasn't the case with Michael Porter because he sort of vanished for part of that series, but he delivered a big game when they needed it. So they had a lot going for them.
By the way, can I share one Aaron Gordon story with you?
Yes.
I sat down with Aaron Gordon to talk about the summer Jokic and how he went out to Sombor to see to see Jokic and actually said, like, basically their chemistry off the court is even better than their chemistry on the court, which, by the way, I believe, according to ESPN Stats and Info, Jokic had like 155 assists to Gordon last year. It was second only to James Harden assists to Joel Embiid. So they had that chemistry. But I had to ask Aaron Gordon. I said, you know what? I haven't talked to you since the finals. I go, the last time I saw you, you were walking on the streets of Denver
with
no shirt on and your basketball shorts. I go, how did that happen? He said, dude, I was trying to get to my locker. And after about an hour of just drinking champagne and celebrating, the locker was packed. He goes, I could not get to my locker. And he's right. The Denver Nuggets, Nuggets locker room was like a club that was just packed nonstop for hours after that game. I mean, like at 2 a.m., I walked in there and I saw the Jokic brothers dancing with Michael Malone. It was insane.
That was some great video of that.
So Aaron goes, so I just said, F it. I'm not going to go to my locker. I'm going to get in the car. My joint is only like, you know, a couple blocks away. I don't live that far away. I live downtown. He says he gets in the car and it's bumper to bumper traffic. And he says, F it. I'm getting out of the car. I'm walking to my apartment. So he says
he was literally wearing his game worn shorts.
Yes. He never changed. Like Jokic, he never changed.
But here's the thing. Jokic was in like four different outfits. Jokic kept doing wardrobe changes.
Well, remember, Jokic dumped Jamal Murray into the pool.
Yes.
Into the training room pool. Right. So he was soaking wet. And of course, soaking wet with champagne. Yes. But eventually at the end of the night, he got dressed. I mean, Aaron Gordon never made it to his locker. So Aaron goes, I get out of the car and I'm walking. First it's five people. Then it's 10. Then it's 25, 50. Now hundreds of people around me. And I go, you weren't afraid for your safety? Like, did you have like a bodyguard with you? He goes, no, a couple of my boys. He goes, dude, he goes, I'm a big boy. I am big bodied. He said something like, I think he said something like, if somebody wanted to riot, he goes, they ain't coming at me or something like that.
Listen, if there's a night where the community is going to collectively protect Aaron Gordon, it would be the night where they won the title and he was a huge part of it. So I would just say that while I give the Nuggets every bit of their due, they were performing it. If they can perform at a better level, I will be in awe because they were performing throughout the playoffs last year at a brilliant level. I mean, they got was 2-2 in that Suns series, right? Wasn't it 2-2? And then the rest of the way they go 10-1. Okay. We all saw how competitive the NBA was last year, that the playoffs were generally competitive. You know, it wasn't the best. It was generally competitive. Some 7-game series, you know, certainly, you know, Lakers, Warriors, Kings, you know, Sixers, Celtics, you know, Heat, Celtics. These were all like really grinder series, right? They go 10-1. Okay. They grabbed it by the throat. So what I'm saying is like, if the Nuggets can play better than that, God bless them. If the Nuggets can repeat that, God bless them. They were just all full speed ahead. So, you know, it's possible that they may not quite play at that quite exact level.
Well, yet. And the other thing too is the adjustment for them is going to be that teams are going to be coming after them every night now. There's no sneaking up on anybody anymore. The thing is that
I don't think Jokic is going to, he's like a metronome, man. I mean, like, I don't know if it matters with a guy like him, but.
Yeah. I mean, I think the thing about Jokic is how much better can he really get? And I asked Michael Malone.
Well,
no, but here's the thing. All great superstars, and I told Mike Malone this, all great superstars come back and they add a new wrinkle, right? The great ones always do that. And because at first Malone was like, I don't tell him in the summertime, go work on your left-hand hook when you go home. I always worry about his mental state of when he comes home after he leaves his mom, he leaves his dad, he leaves Sombor, he leaves his horses. Is he going to be okay, right? But then I said, But look, if he was celebrating all summer long, how much does he work on his game? And when you got an all-time great like that, they almost always add things, right? And so I said, what can he add? I guess defensively, he can always get better, but how about him shooting threes, like being more aggressive about it? Dude, he shot like 46% from three, if I'm not mistaken, in the postseason. And it's like, yeah, it's unbelievable, right? So like the Nuggets beat writers, they all say, well, you know what it is with Jokic? If you look at his percentage in the regular season, he shoots it okay, but it's just like he doesn't care to shoot it in the regular season. He shoots it when he has to in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. And that's what you saw, like, you know, the heave over Anthony Davis. I mean, I was thinking like, this guy could be like Dirk. I mean, I'm not saying he's going to shoot like Dirk, but if he adds to three and shoots it and is more aggressive, it opens everything else up for the Nuggets. Now, what are you going to do with him? And Michael Malone actually said, yeah, it not only opens things up for us, but now he can do that shot fake. And now he's, you know, heading in with a full head of steam into the paint. He can hit that runner or he creates for other guys. So I think actually if he could add that wrinkle, I don't know. You know, Jokic, he's always going to be like, I take what the defense gives me, brother. You know what I mean? I'm not going to be aggressive with that three.
It is a math problem for him. He calculates it like a supercomputer. He does.
but dude, think about how good he shot it from three. I mean, it's like if he adds he's unstoppable.
He slings it. The ball goes off the camera and it splashes in. It's
46.1% from three, Wendy.
I mean, geez. I mean, like I said, I don't know if they can play better like that. Like if you're looking for a way you beat them, you think they return. I would just say, you know, talking to people around Denver, they always say that like when Jokic comes back from Serbia every year, like his English is a little bit off almost because he like so checks out. He doesn't speak a word of English for like 3 months. And so maybe, you know, and we're seeing videos or whatever. And so maybe you're thinking, you know, he's got some sort of hangover, like maybe. Not that that even matters in October. No, he's come back absolutely like he didn't even take a day off, which is not a surprise. But, you know, he looks absolutely spectacular.
I think what helped him was that he did not play for Serbia this summer. I think he like the previous summer he did. And I had heard that, you know, like he came into camp and he might have been his whole like, oh, here we go. I'm back to work again. But I had heard that when he came back here this summer, he was in a great mental area. And then like, you know, like Peyton Watson actually said, he's more vocal this year. And I said, well, what? Give me an example. Why is he more vocal? And he said, we had the referees come in yesterday to talk about the new rules. And he goes, Joey Crawford's telling us new rules. Nikola had 10 questions. And he goes, wow. He said something. And he said, last year, Nikola would have said nothing. And he said, so now we see him being more fun. I was thinking to myself, I would think Nikola would be going at Joey Crawford every referee session every summer because he's pissed off about the officiating all the time. But Mike Malone actually joked. He said, I thought the two were going to go at it because Nikola was telling Joey Crawford, listen, brother, I know you say this is the rule, but they ain't calling it. And this is why. And Nikola was going back and forth with the guy. But they were saying that Nikola is more vocal this camp, which I think is a definite plus for them.
Yeah. They also signed Justin Holiday. I don't know if he exactly is the Jeff Green type player, but that's kind of the role. He's not, you know, he's not as big as Jeff Green. He's not going to play this. He can't really play four. But that also, I just would point out that they did sign a guy like that who, in theory, is like a veteran who's been around the league and come in a little bit. But, all right, well, the Nuggets seem to be doing fine. they're definitely going to have to be reckoned with. So before we go, I wanted to check in on the Lopez belt, as I call it, New Orleans and Oklahoma City. Not Oklahoma City, San Antonio. Sorry, started on the brain. I'm bummed, Lopez, that Chet Holmgren didn't play for the Thunder on Sunday, so no new Chet Holmgren data. And also, the Spurs announced on Sunday that Victor Wembanyama is not playing on Monday. Who are they playing tomorrow? I don't even remember.
It's the first of two at Houston. Houston's going to play here, I think, Monday and Wednesday, and it's. Before anybody else gets any, it's just a rest day type situation where almost all of the Spurs starters are getting one day off, you know, in the preseason. Like it's also Devin Vassell and Trey Jones are also sitting on Monday night along with Victor. But I'm still recovering from our trip to Oklahoma City last week. and then it only got better.
That's what I was going to say. Look, you and I, we're at Oklahoma City for that game. I talked a lot about it on the pod. And then Victor went out and had almost probably a better game.
100%.
One of the things I was talking about on the pod was like, you know, he probably shouldn't be dribbling so much because he didn't dribble so great in summer league and he didn't dribble so great in the opener. It's like the one thing he struggled with. And then he comes out and puts on a couple of moves off the dribble. Was it on Friday night or Saturday night?
Friday night It was the in and out behind the back fadeaway from like 16 or 17.
I couldn't even see the ball on that, Lopez. It was so fast. I mean, I was looking at the highlight on my phone, yes, and I got a big iPhone Pro, but it's like I couldn't even see the ball.
It's one play
on the left elbow. He like made a spin move fadeaway where he did an escape dribble. Then he came down the right side. And this is one thing that I remember him from watching him last year. He went low. He dropped his body. This is one of the things that his coaches, when I talked to his coaches, his youth coaches, they always taught him to dribble low. Even when he was 12 and he was, 6'4", they taught him to dribble low. He got low, went right, crossed over, step back, fadeaway. And it was like jaw dropping. And then in a play that this isn't as impactful as the play last year where he missed the three pointer and then got a tip dunk.
Yeah.
But he was bringing the ball up the court down the right side. And I can't remember who he threw it to, but he threw the ball. He's bringing the ball. He throws the ball to somebody on the right wing behind the three-point line.
Trey Jones.
He is also out. Trey Jones.
Yep. Like, I got something on this one, but go ahead.
Okay. He throws the ball to Trey Jones. And then as soon as he lets go of the ball, he's 24 feet from the basket, give or take. Am I correct in saying this?
You are correct.
The ball isn't even at Trey Jones's hand or, okay, I guess if you went and looked at the replay, maybe the ball is in Trey Jones's hand for a split second. And Victor points that he wants a lob. He calls for a lob 24 feet from the basket. Basically, he wants a give and go.
Yep.
And Trey Jones does, and Victor scores on the lob.
But it was where he threw that lob. he threw that lob near the free throw line inside the paint. I mean, it was amazing. Like, I couldn't even believe that he got to that ball, caught it, and dunked it from that far out. I told Ty Lue this. I talked to Ty Lue the other day at practice. I go, did you see that alley-oop? And he's like, yeah. And I go, it's one of the most unbelievable things I've ever seen. And he goes, Nico Batum has been telling us this for 2 years now about this kid.
The funniest thing about this whole play, the point, the give and go, and it's, as we talked to Trey Jones about this after the game, Trey Jones says, first off, the craziest thing about the play, when you sit back and look at it, wasn't the fact the lob or anything else. It's the fact that I was 6'2 on a good day, setting a screen for a guy who's 7'4. Like, let's talk about that part of what Victor is first. As soon as he touched it, Victor is behind the three-point line. When Trey Jones lets the ball go, Victor has a foot behind the three-point line. And Trey Jones says, I was just lobbing it. I wasn't trying to throw an alley-oop. He did the rest. He wasn't trying to throw the alley-oop. He just knew, if I put the ball in the air, where only Vic can get it, he'll take care of the rest. And boy, did he take care of the rest. And when we're talking to Devin Vassell after the game about it, Devin's like, that wasn't even the most impressive play.
That's right. I know what you're going to say.
He's more impressed by the Euro step dunk where Victor started in like one step inside the free throw line.
That was the Thomas Bryan play.
No, that was not the Thomas Bryan play. That was another play. The Thomas Bryan one's where he just catches it. I think he did a little spin and then just finished over Thomas Bryan. This was one in the first half where he's on the break and his first step as he's catching it. So as soon as he's putting his foot down, he's maybe a few inches inside the 3-point line and then Euros and finishes with a dunk. And it's a clean basketball play. And just the amount of distance he is traveling with his Euro. We were joking afterwards, it's probably the longest Euro step in NBA history. But, he makes so much distance. Trey was kind of like, look, I just put the ball in the air. And the fact that he can catch it and fit, it's – the Thomas Bryant dunk was another one that, you get lost in everything that Wimby did that night. And it's just – day after day, I mean, game after game, he's just going to continue to have these freakish plays.
I am not trying to create more work for you, Lopez, but my first year with the Lakers when Lonzo was here, we basically did like a running diary of Lonzo's triple B shoes. And what there was one point where Lonzo in the preseason was wearing a different shoe. He was wearing like shoe like every game. And we did like a running diary of like what he was wearing and why. I think it would be fascinating if you did every game one play that just made our jaws drop. And you probably will have one every single night with Victor Wembanyama every game.
You know what the problem is going to be? Figuring out one.
Yeah.
Because you go the other night. I mean, is it the Thomas Bryant dunk where Thomas Bryant turns around to his own bench and is like, what do I do?
Yeah.
Is it the 24 foot Euro? Is it the lob from when he's behind the, you know, I mean, the play with a 7-4 guy, you know, in and out behind the back fadeaway. And it's like, it's nothing. I mean, there's just been a number of them each game so far where it doesn't make sense.
The Thomas Bryant play, Victor dunks the ball from outside the restricted area.
Yes.
With his left hand. Thomas Bryant, who's playing for the Heat. This is all against the Heat, everything in this game we're talking about. He dunks the ball with his left hand from outside the restricted area. And Thomas Bryant, there's this, I wish I could tell you who said it or who videoed it. A fan is taking video from like second or third row from courtside. And after Wembanyama dunks it, I mean, it's out there. There's millions of views. I'm sure you've seen it if you're listening to this podcast. Thomas Bryant looks over at the Heat bench like, what the hell was that? I don't even know what I just saw. And so, yeah, these are all plays from one preseason game.
More Hoop Collective podcast after this.
If only starting your fitness journey was as easy as starting this podcast. The truth is, all the lift big, get big, and beach body ready in 3 weeks pressure stops most of us from even starting. And starting is what matters most. It's everything. Wherever you're beginning and wherever you want to be, Peloton encourages you to just start. With thousands of classes to get you moving and doing what you can, even if that's just a 10-minute low-impact class, they have those too. And when you're ready, take it up a gear with a 30-minute live DJ ride. Start with Peloton and find instructors that will keep you motivated to stay on your fitness journey. Learn the basics and build from there. Remember, doing something is everything. Get started with a Peloton bike or bike plus rental at onepeloton.com/bike/rentals. Terms apply. By the way, I just want to talk something a little bit real quick about Victor Wembanyama's height, because he's all over the place. And you just said 7-4 ohm. Typically, NBA players' heights in the roster are in shoes. Victor Wembanyama, when he was measured by the Spurs, came at 7'3.5" without shoes. Okay. So if he puts shoes on, he is over 7'4". He's probably 7'5", but calling him 7'5" is not unreasonable. And the other night when Lopez and I were there, he towers over Zach Collins, who's 6'11", and is significantly taller than Chet Holmgren.
Well, Chet, that picture of him holding his hands up and someone is trying to shoot a three over him, where it looks like you're trying to shoot a three over a wall, it's insane. It's absolutely insane. Yeah.
So he
credit to Luka for making that, by the way. The first right. there was one of the first game where he made one over that wall.
Okay. So he obviously prefers to be called 7'3". The Spurs have him listed at 7'3". You hear people talking about how he is 7'3". When he's out on the court, he is 7'5". The people in France routinely refer to him as 7'5".
And he might still be growing, right?
It's possible. I don't know. I'm just saying you're seeing all these different, you're hearing people say 7'3", 7'4", 7'5". Officially, in bare feet, 7'3.5". That's what the Spurs measured him at when he arrived, because he didn't go to the pre-draft camp because he was still playing in France. So just want to get that.
When he gets low, Wendy, what height do you think he's at when he's dribbling it? When you say he's dribbling low? Question. Do you think he's dribbling down to like 6'4", 6'2"?
I don't know, but he's still going to be able to get ripped because the ball is still coming. There's the height that the ball comes up, even with his quote unquote low dribble, he's still vulnerable to getting his pocket pick. The same thing happened with Kevin Durant. Durant, I think I've said this before, his like first 3 or 4 years in the league, he averaged more turnovers than assists because he'd get his pocket picked because the ball had to travel so far. Now, Wembanyama is a better dribbler than Kevin Durant was when he came in the league. And this is one of the things I've been saying. The last five MVPs are seven-footers. So you're talking about, you know, Harden won it 6 years ago, then Giannis twice, Jokic twice, Embiid. They're all seven-footer above. I don't know what Giannis is listed at, but he's might be 7'1". I don't know. Victor is taller than all of them by several inches. You know, I think Embiid's 7'2". And he's better than all of them at age 19. I think that's, I don't think anybody would debate that. He's better than all of them and taller than all of them when they were the same age. So just keep that in mind when you're looking at him. So I do think that that dribble is going to be susceptible to getting picked, and he's going to have some turnovers off the dribble. But that doesn't mean that he's not going to also do some spectacular stuff. But I do think one of the things that we're going to see as this year goes on is he's going to want to have that dribble because all bigs want to be wings and teams are going to attack that. So, but Lopez, I mean, what are people in the, you know, I know the Spurs are downplaying it, but come on, man, like they can't hide from this.
So I think both Devin and might've been Malachi Branham have both said at various times, this thing, like, I think even Sohan has said it as well. It doesn't make sense. None of it makes sense. Like it takes a while for your brain to process. And I think I asked Trey the other night, like, when did you figure out that you could just put it up? Like, I mean, obviously the catch radius is ridiculous. And he's like, very quickly, very, very quickly, you realize that there were things that he could do offensively that just bail you out. And that's not even talking about we've had multiple guys say, you know, I can now play way more aggressive defensively knowing that he's back there. And there were a number of plays the other day where I think both against Oklahoma City and Miami where his presence just changes the shot. He doesn't even have to get the block. I think there was one where Victor throws an inbounds pass. Somebody doesn't come down because of their point guard situation, which I want to talk about in a second. Victor makes a turnover, and I think it was Haywood Highsmith. He gets it and goes to the rim. Victor's on the other side, and just Victor's presence on the other side of the rim, Haywood's like, I'm gonna pass this out and try to set something else back up. He's already doing that at 19, and teams are like, maybe we shouldn't go in there.
He's played two games.
When he's down there. So, but I will say, I think during media day, Pop said one of the things that this team needed to figure out is what is Victor Wembanyama's position? Is he a four? Is he a five? Is he a three? And I think in the majority of the first two preseason games, all of the Oklahoma City game, he played the four. I think he mostly shared the court with Zach Collins, a little bit with Charles Bassey. Against the Heat, San Antonio did a couple of things that were different. Keldon Johnson has not played a preseason game yet because of a small hamstring issue. I think he is expected to play Monday. Zach Collins got his rest day. And in their place, they started Charles Bassey and Jetty Osman. But at the one, they started Jeremy Sohan in what could be a very supersized lineup if they decide to roll
with
it.
Sohan 6'8"?
So you're looking at Jeremy at the one. This would take Trey Jones out of the lineup, make Trey Jones the sixth man. Because if you have Jeremy at the one, Devin at the two, Keldon Johnson at the three, Vic at the four, Zach Collins at the five, Trey Jones, in theory, could come in for any one of those players.
That's correct.
And you shift your lineup around.
You know what? That is a real basic statement, but that is damn right.
Who brings the ball up the floor?
Sohan is the one in that lineup.
So like you could pressure him. Well, I mean, I don't know if you want to do that, but like you could pressure him, right?
Yeah. So, and I think they'll experiment. We saw some experimentation in that game. And there were a couple of times, I think Devin even said at one point, hey, like, go be a guard. Like, he was giving it up too much. Like, you can, like, you're the guy right now. Go be the point guard. And I think Trey's the perfect guy to kind of, in this situation, maybe come off the bench as the sixth man, and he can come in. If Victor picks up two fouls, you know, in the first 4 minutes, okay, Trey can come in. Everybody slides up a position. You know, if the same thing happens to Zach, okay, Victor can slide to the five. Because in this game, they did it finally. We saw some Victor at the 5 minutes in spurts, but that potential starting lineup, if they want to roll with that, is almost the epitome of positionless basketball right now, and what everybody could do. Because if Vic gets a rebound, he's going to push it. You could do the same thing with Devin. I mean, it's just, it's very interesting to see.
The problem with that lineup is Sohan isn't really a shooter. Collins is inconsistent, and Victor is inconsistent from the outside. He's not yet proven he can. In that lineup, you're leaning real heavy on Vassell.
Happened to go 6 of 7 the other night, so maybe it made it look a little easier.
He is very good. He is very good. I think we're going to constantly see stuff with the Spurs doing that. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's extraordinarily rare. You guys have heard me talk about this on the pod before. It's extraordinarily rare for a rookie to truly impact winning and losing. I mean, he helps win. He helps you improve. But like LeBron didn't. Luka didn't. Durant didn't. Like, these were, you know, I mean, I don't have an exhaustive list in front of me, but like, it's very unusual. So the Spurs are still an incomplete team, but
I just think it's not too, for Pop, he's talked about this experimentation and what these lineups are going to look like. And I think this is just showing how much they are willing to experiment this year as they still try to figure out, well, ultimately, because the ultimate question is, what is the best way to get the most out of Victor and then figure out the team around him? And you just keep experimenting until you figure that out.
Right. I mean, in all honesty, like, who on this roster are you 100% sure is going to be on this team in 3 years, 2 years? I would say right now, Victor and Vassell. I mean, I don't think anybody else, they're like, you know, overwhelming. I mean, you know, they would never say that. They're right. They love all their players. But like, seriously, like, if 2 years from now, like, a whole bunch of the team had turned over, like, it wouldn't surprise you. I think they really like Vassell. And obviously it's Victor. I think the rest of it is sort of, I do think Sohan potentially is a real.
I was going to say he would be the third guy on that list for me.
But again, I'm a little bit worried about the spacing. But listen, I mean, Victor's played part-time of 2 games and he's generated 10 highlight plays, 7 highlight plays. It's crazy. It's
both sides. I think a couple of the blocks that he has made.
Well, he had a block in Oklahoma City. Like, I didn't even really talk about it. Jalen Williams block. Jalen Williams makes a good play to get past him, which you expect him to. Jalen Williams is gone. He's going to the rim. He's free and clear. And he got swatted. He just got it totally. He had no idea Victor could come over the top of his head like he did to block that shot.
Let me ask you something. Do you guys think the officials will know how to officiate this guy? Like when Shaq came in and was so physical and dominant, the officials were calling fouls on him all the time because they'd never seen a guy like that. I mean, yeah, since Shaq Wilt probably. But it was hard to officiate a guy like Shaq. This guy, you've never seen a guy like this before. How are you gonna officiate him with his length and the shots he's blocking from behind and like whether or not it's going to be contact or not? I feel like there are going to be a lot of nights we're going to see Wembanyama getting a ton of foul trouble and it might not be
Maybe
legit.
Not.
I think the defensive end. I think the defensive end, it's going to be okay. I think the thing, it's going to be like the over the backs. Those are going to be the calls that I'm just like, it's going to be hard because he's just jumping straight up and he's just going to put the ball. Like, those are the ones, or maybe on like the glass are going to be the ones. I think the problem with like a Shaq or like even a Zion when he just bowls into people is he's just so strong. It doesn't make sense. Like that is where it was the strength of them is kind of where
Victor moves side to side.
Yeah.
But Victor moves side to side. My guess is Victor's issue, in addition to loose ball fouls, will be charges because eventually people will realize, first off, I think teams are going to guard him with potentially 3s and 4s. I think that's mm-hmm. where we're headed. So obviously he's going to be bigger than everybody, but he may have enormous size on people. And so their only defense will be to just flop or throw themselves in front of him. But I will say that, again, in the French League, he was second. As an 18-year-old, he was second in free throws. He knows how to get to the line, and he has been getting to the line in his first 2 NBA games. He is shifty. He goes side to side. He will get – I think he's going to go to get to the line. You know, Shaq sometimes got the line a lot because, A, he wasn't a good free throw shooter, and, B, sometimes it was the only recourse you had. You just had to
– there were a lot of times when Shaq was fouled, and they never called it. You know what I mean? Just because he just didn't move.
Oh, 100%.
And I know Wembanyama is a totally different body. What I'm talking about is like is exactly what you said, Lopez, is that when he comes from behind and he just unbelievably blocks a shot out of nowhere that we were not expecting, I hope referees don't call fouls on those things just because they're just not used to seeing like that. And they think there was body contact there.
He's going to get him clean. He's going to get him. He's going to block those shots and they're going to stun the hell out of everybody because they're going to think they got it away clean.
There was one the other night.
Like the Jalen Williams.
Oh, there was one against Thomas Bryant the other night where it was, he came from the outside of the rim. I think might've got it with his left hand. First of all, the shot from above, you just see his hand on top of the ball. That's all you see. It's one of those shots that you're like, again, it doesn't make sense, but it was called a foul because it looked like, oh, there's no way he would have got that clean. Challenge the call.
Right. This is the one I was talking about, right? Because it looked like it was almost like arm to arm, right? Like at one point.
And he just, it doesn't make sense.
Well, it's going to be fun to watch. And Lopez, I was worried that Victor was going to take some time, and he probably is still going to take some time, but two games in, you know.
Another 15 scouts, by the way. Another 15 scouts were at that, at that game last Friday.
I know, like people were like, oh, well, it's because the Spurs might have to cut people. And I'm like, yeah. And they want to see Victor. That's all true. Yeah. And they want to see Victor.
That was definitely the case, I think, against Oklahoma City, because Oklahoma City does have to cut a really good player in theory. But yeah, no, they want to see Victor.
It's Victor.
I mean, like, it's all Victor.
Yeah. All right, guys. Well, thanks for stopping by. Appreciate your time. Thanks for making us smarter here on the Hoop Collective. Thank you to Jackson for producing. And we will talk to you later this week. By the way, we should have a special guest on Thursday. You guys know that I don't have special guests outside the collective often. We do have a guest booked. I don't want to assume that he will make it, but we do have potentially a special guest for Thursday. So tune in. I say Thursday. I'm recording Thursday. It will come out Friday. So tune in to find out if it actually happened or not, or if I'll never mention it again.